I want to start by reviewing our letters. All right, so we're going to, we need to work on the letters tonight a little bit. So we're writing Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon, Zeta, Eta, Theta, Iota, Kappa, Lambda, Mu, Nu, Xi, Omicron, P, Rho, Sigma, Tau, Upsilon, Phi, Chi, Psi, and Omega. All right, now, which are the vowels? Let's pick them out. Start from the first. Alpha. Epsilon. Eta. Iota. Omicron. Upsilon. Omega. So the alpha, the epsilon, the eta, iota, omicron, upsilon, and omega. All right, of these, which ones are obviously short? That you can tell by the form of it that it's short.
Epsilon.
Iota.
Omicron.
Omicron. And then the long ones that are long, obviously, I mean by the letter itself, it's long.
Eta.
That's right, eta and omega. Now, in the case of the alpha and the iota and the upsilon, it may or may not be long, and you just have to tell by the way it's used in a word. All right, so these are the letters, and remember that we've made the point that in the alphabet, what you're going to be doing is taking the initial sound of that letter, putting it together to make a word, so that if we had a word just composed of the alpha, beta, gamma, we wouldn't call this word alpha, beta, gamma. We would be putting together the abg, the initial sounds. That's what we're putting together. All right, so you need to practice until you do that, and we're going to have to do a little practicing on that tonight. But then, some other sounds that we need to get fixed in mind are called diphthongs. Now, a diphthong is a word that is made, it's a Greek word, actually. It's an English word that is a Greek word. And the di is from the idea of dis, twice, and the other part is thong, fungus, which is almost like fungus, but it means a sound. So two sounds. So what we do is we combine, all right, we combine the alpha and the iota, and the epsilon and the iota, and the omicron and the iota. We have I, A, oi. Now, if you go to some schools or if you read some grammars would make that diphthong, the epsilon, iota, it would have it I. A lot of Baptists, for example, would pronounce that. Their seminaries and so on, that's the way that they would typically pronounce it. In some of the classical grammars, they would have it that way. I have several grammars that would do it that way, but others say A, and that's the way I learned it. So that's the way we will do it until you take another course. So we'll just use that one. But remember, there are slightly different systems. This is one of the biggest differences among common schools and everything in pronunciation is pronunciation of the A or I, that diphthong. All right, now then, just as a help to remembering it, notice that we have taken the three A-E-O, and we have put them all three with the iota. Now, we will take the same three, like that, the alpha, epsilon, and omicron, and we put them with the upsilon. Now, didn't quite do that one right. So we put that one with the upsilon. Now we have au, u, and u. Au, u, and u. So, let me redo that. So this is an Omicron. So this is owl as the OW in towel, owl. This is as the EU in feud, U. And this is the OU as the double O in food, oo. Now, I told you last time there are lots of things you can study and learn. And you can just study and learn all the different ways these have been pronounced at all the different times they've been pronounced. There's a great deal of variation. We're not worried too much about that. And remember that our purpose here is not to become Greek scholars who have nothing to do but study all the things that ever happened to an alpha. What we're wanting to do is get this to the point that we can handle the words. In fact, this is a good point for me to tell you something. If all you are wanting to do in this course is get the ability to handle the alphabet some, be able to deal with words some, that's all you want to do, be able to look up a word or something like that, then I would advise you, see how thin these are? And it's not a matter of which ones they are. But you don't need much for that. Now, this one happens to be vines. You can learn Greek. This one happens to be guy in woods, how to read the Greek New Testament. Both of these are good, very simple, elementary things. They have all the information you would need for that. If you want to go beyond that, then there are a lot of grammars. Now, the one that we're going to be using is this one that's called Machen's Grammar. It's written by J. Gresham Machen. And it's the one that I have used most. I have a number of others. Some are more complex, a lot more complex. Even some basic elementary grammars would be more complex than that. And there are modern ones that have been done that I'm not acquainted with. But if all you're going to do is just get a kind of a handle on this and be able to say some words and things like that, then I would advise you just to get by as cheaply as you can on the book you get. But if you do feel at the end of the course that you want to go on in it, then I would advise you to get the Machen's Grammar. And then further lessons will involve a lot more than we're doing here. All right, so you have I, A, Oi, Ow, U, and then ooh, and then here's another one. And that one is sort of like the hui, except we don't have a vowel with it. It's part of a word, that would be the word huias, hui. So this diphthong has the sound of hui, 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 as the W-H-E-E. That's pretty well it, hui. Just don't make wee, wee, weos. So that's the seventh common diphthong. There are two other diphthongs that are not very common. So I don't see any reason to add them to your memory load. So there are two others, but they're more rare. And so we'll just stick with those seven diphthongs. So once again, we have I, A, Oi, Ow, U, U, and we. Now, any of these are considered long. So far as accenting is concerned, they're considered long, except for the I and the oi. If they are final diphthongs, then they're short, so far as accenting is concerned. Now, at this point, you may say, I'm not going to be able to remember all this. I'm not going to be able to remember all this. Well, certainly not right at the moment. But over a period of six lessons, then hopefully it will begin to stick. And I'll tell you again, this is an opportunity for you to learn some things, but it's also an opportunity for you to decide, is this what I want to do? Now, I love to study Greek, but I know what it means to study it. And I know you can't do it casually and do it any good at all. So that's the reason why I'm being honest with you about that. I love the study of it, but I have to be realistic and tell you about that. All right, so let's do a little bit of work now on practicing some of these things. And so let me erase the diphthongs that we've written. And let's just practice a little bit of pronunciation. So I'm going to put various words up here. And right now, let's not worry about the accents. I'll put an accent All right, first let's read the letters off. Lambda, Epsilon, Gamma, Omega. So we have the sounds of L, E, G, O. Put that together, and what do you have there? Lego, Lego, Lego. Whoops. All right. All right, let's try another one. Now, that's a verb, and we'll talk about that later. All right, we have beta, lambda, epsilon, p, omega. So we have b, l, e, p, o. So, blepo, blepo. This one is I say, this one is I see. But don't worry too much right now. We'll go back over that. We're practicing right now how to say them. And I found that it's better to concentrate on what you're using it for this time. So really imprint in your mind that you're saying, I'm learning how to say this word, regardless of what it means. I'm learning how to say it. All right, let's try this one. All right. Delta, Yoda, Delta, Alpha, Sigma, Kappa, Omega. So we have D, I, D, A, S, K, O. So, Didasco, Didasco. That would be the word I teach. I teach. All right, one of the most common verbs, because this one is used, I say common, I should say maybe well known. One of the best known is because it is used as a model for conjugation. But this is the lambda, upsilon, omega. So we have l, u, o. Luo. 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 Luo means I loose or I destroy. All right, let's try a noun. Read the letters off. Alpha, Delta, Epsilon, Lambda, Phi, Omicron, Sigma. So we have A, D, E, L, F, A, S. So, Adelphos. So this is part of the word, part of the city name, Philadelphia. This is the brotherly part. The city of brotherly love, you know, Adelphos, Philadelphia. So Adelphos is the idea of brother. All right. All right. Now I'm going to erase this, and let's do some other things. So let me just erase this. And you have your paper there, you have your book, so that you can practice on these things. But I'm going to erase all this now, and we need to look at some other things. Now, if we were I depart just a little bit from the way the book goes, partly depending on whether you want to continue studying this later on or not. In other words, the next thing to do would be to study marks of punctuation and some things like that. An accent. And that's fun. The six rules of accent are as follows. No. Instead, I want to talk with you about something else for a little bit. One of the biggest adjustments you have to make in studying any language, almost any language other than English, is that other languages have inflection. And English has very little inflection. So I want to tell you now, I want you to understand this. Inflection. It's not hard. You just have to be able to absorb this, all right? Inflection. This is a general word for at least two different kinds of changes. I-N-F-L-E-C-T-I-O-N, inflection. It is changes to the form of a word to show usage in a sentence. Okay. Now, in English, we have some inflection. For example, take the word man, and we want to make it plural. So, what would be the change? The A to an E. That's inflection. If you were talking about running in the present, then you wanted to talk about you'd already done that. How would you go from run to ran? See? So, we have some inflection, but we don't have near as much as other languages do have, a lot of other languages. There aren't, not all languages really get into inflection, but a lot of them do. German, French, Spanish, Latin, Greek, all of them use inflection. Now, when we're talking about inflection, there are two kinds of inflection, two kinds of changes. One is the changes that you would make to a verb. The changes you make to a verb are called conjugation. So these are the changes you make to a verb. Now, like run to ran, that would be like conjugation. When I was in grammar school way back, we learned that you were supposed to say, I shall run, I will run, or no, I shall run, you will run, he will run. So you'd go, I shall, you will, he will. That's just not done anymore. Now, I talked with an English teacher from way back who had retired, and I asked her about this. She said it's still written in the books that way, but nobody does it. Now, if we say shall, we're using shall emphatically. So, you know, if I say, I shall go to town, you will go to town, he will go to town. Then I'm saying, I shall go to town. It's like MacArthur, I shall return. But it used not, you know. So we had more of that kind of thing. But now we don't have as much conjugation. Now the nouns. Now, this is true of nouns and adjectives. We have what's called declension. Declension. And declension refers to the changes that indicate the way that a noun is used, or noun or an adjective is used in a sentence. So when you make those changes, that is called declining the noun. You're declining the noun. You're conjugating the verb. Now, you need to know about that, and I'll show you now. We're going to illustrate the importance of this. All right, so is everyone ready? All right, we're going to illustrate the difference that this makes. One thing it does is it gives the Greeks a great deal more variety in the way they want to say a thing. We don't have too much trouble saying things that we want to say, but we have ways of doing it, variety, ways that we can have variety in saying things. but now, let me illustrate further. Let's take this noun here. And if I had the verb over here, then what form, what part of the sentence is man going to be there? Is he the one doing the hitting? probably that'd be a direct object. Because whatever hit a man. Now, if we take that and we put it over here, the man hit, or man hit. Just putting that on one side or the other changes the way this is going to be used, but did it change its form? See, it didn't change its form. So that in our English, the positions of the words are extremely important. You can't play with the position of the words near as much as you can in Greek. Because the position of the words is what you're going to use to a great extent to tell you what you mean by your subject here, or your word, whether it's a subject or the object or whatever. So, let me show you now. Now, suppose we said, now, don't try to learn all this as words. I'm going to just illustrate. I'm going to put up here, first, the word in Greek for houses. All right, so we're going to put houses. Now, I have used a certain case for that. And again, don't worry too much about that, because right now what I'm wanting to show you is the effect of this ability to decline a word, to show the way it's used in a sentence. So I have oikos here, and then I'm going to have... And just for kicks, I'm going to have anthropos here. And then I'm going to have the verb lue here. All right, now this means houses, this means man, and this means destroys. So what would you think this would mean? Houses man destroys. Would that make good English? No. But a Greek looking at that would, with that nimble mind of his, being used to being able to do this because of the different cases and everything, he would immediately say, a man is destroying houses? And he would be saying, who? Why? He wouldn't even hesitate. He could see, because this is the accusative, even though it's first in the sentence. This is a nominative, the subject, even though it's second. The verb is last. This just illustrates the variety of the way that you could. Now, you could have it like this. You could take the anthropos lue, stick it over here. Anthropos lue oikos. Now, that would be more like the English order. A man is destroying houses. But do you see, I'm wanting you to see the advantage of inflection. The advantage of declension is that you can tell by the ending of the word the way that word is used in a sentence. So this is a very important feature of Greek for you to understand. It would be a very important feature for you to learn in a bunch of languages if you set out to study them, because declension is a prominent feature in many languages. So this is something that you would need to understand. So it's something that I like to get across to people and help them to see that. All right, let me play around that just a little bit more. See, I'm doing this to let you know that it's not all nuts and bolts. You can kind of have some fun with it. All right. Let's do this line right here. Yes. All right, now we'll stop there for a moment. N-R-K-A-N-H-A-L-A-G-A-S. Now this is N beginning, was the Word. That's John 1:1. And in our English translations, it'll say, in the beginning was the Word, which means that in English, it pretty well follows along the same way. In our K, Ein Halagos, and Kai Halagos, Ein Pros Ton Theon, and then we have a line like this. Which we translate, God was the Word. God was the Word. Or the Word was God. I believe, let's say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, this is the order of it. The Word was God is the way it is in most English translations. The Word was God. And yet, here you have the word for God. Here's the word for was. Here's the, and here's the word. The term word. The Word was God. Now, how are they able to do that? Well, this is a verb that would take a predicate nominative, meaning that whatever it's saying about this and this, these are going to be in the same case. This gave the Greeks their ability to do this, gave them the opportunity to emphasize, so that what they've done here, what John did, was he put the word he wanted to emphasize first in the clause. So he put theos first in the clause. So if you just look at it literally, you'd think it's saying God was the Word. Well, actually, that's what it is. That's what it is. But God is placed first as a matter of emphasis, even though our English translations say, and the Word was God. So when in English we want to emphasize, we could say like this, the Word was God, and we would underline. But they didn't underline. I just did that. But they would put the word to be emphasized here in the first of the sentence. So this gave them the opportunity and the ability to be very flexible in the way that they wanted to say things. All right, so that's just a little bit that I wanted you to understand about that, regardless of whether you go on in Greek or not. I want you to know about that. That's a very prominent feature of the Greek language. So you have to learn how to decline and how to conjugate. If you look back in Machen's, I'll tell you what, I'll go ahead and do this. I'm going to look back here in Machen's, and I want to tell those of you who have Machen's, and I'll show the others of you who don't have Machen's. In the back of the book where he has the appendix, the appendices. Yeah. Now I'm going to show. You see this whole top, you see this whole page, that chart there? You see that chart? That is all the forms of that verb that you would need to know to be able to say all that you might ever want to say. Now, the beauty of it is that once you learn the ending, you can stick the endings on any verb of that class. And then, you know, you got it. So that's what we're talking about, and of course, we also have the declensions we could look at and everything. Now, there are some punctuation marks used that we need to know about, so let me go ahead and tell you about those. All right, we have the period, which looks like the English period. We have the comma, which looks like the English comma. And then we have the colon, also, how appropriate here, colon and the semicolon. See, I used one right there. However, the sign in Greek that's used for that is a dot above the line. And the fourth one, a question mark. A question mark looks like our semicolon. So those are the four punctuation marks. Period, comma, colon or semicolon, which is the dot above the line, and the question mark, which looks like an English semicolon. So that's pretty simple. You don't have too many of those. And there's something else that I want to tell you about here, and that is accent. We need to talk about that a little bit. So does everybody have this? Nothing to learn about the period. It looks the same as ours, comma, same as ours, dot above the line. For a colon or semicolon, the question mark is the, it looks like an English semicolon. All right, see, this is the colon in Greek. It's a dot above the line. The question mark is looks like an English semicolon. Do you see? You see what I mean? See, here I just used one to divide these two terms. This is an English semicolon here. But either one of these is represented in the Greek language by a dot above the line. Whereas instead of our little question mark, you'd use that instead. All right? Now, another thing to remember, keep in mind as you study. When you're studying Greek, at least most people are studying it primarily to be able to read it. You're not studying it primarily to be able to write it. You're studying it primarily to be able to read it. But writing it and working with it is an excellent way to learn it. And so that's the reason why you learn some of these things, so that you can practice. And one of the best ways to learn it and know you're knowing it, knowing you're getting it, is to translate the English back into the Greek. I know when you do your exercises, first you get to where you can do the Greek in English, no problem. And you would rather do that. You know how it is in nearly any discipline where you're learning stuff, there's a phase of it that's pretty easy to do. I'd rather do that. And then there are phases of it which really, really take it. Take the concentration, take the work, and that's the part you tend to say, do I have to do that? Well, it's a matter of how thoroughly do you want to learn it. And so that's the way it is with a lot of Greek. All right. Now let's look at the accents. Now some make the comment about accents that you don't need to know. You need to know almost nothing about accents to be able to read Greek. And I generally agree with him on that. There are some words that you would need to know to be able to distinguish what the words are from one another. They might be identical except for the accent. But generally, yeah, I would agree with that. But if you're really going to be a good Greek student, you're going to follow the study, then accents are something you really need to know. So let's look at some things about the accents. The first thing is that an accent in Greek today indicates stress, whereas originally it indicated musical pitch. Now, have you ever thought about musical pitch in our language, in the words we use? Most people haven't. But if you would listen to what I just said, I have been using musical pitch in the terms that I have just uttered. Like when we come to an end of a sentence where we're just making a statement, we typically go down in our pitch. If we're asking a question, or did you hear me then? If you're asking a question, you hear me come up there? Because I was going to kind of pause there and then go ahead. We do this all the time. Well, the Greeks did too. But you can read in grammar book after grammar book that it says we do not know how they pronounced. We do not know exactly how they pronounced. So we don't need to worry about that. So now our accents deal with the stress. Now I've found that a lot of people don't know. They just don't. They find it very hard to understand this thing about stress. emphasis. As someone said, you have to put the emphasis upon the wrong syllable. All right, so let's practice this just a little bit. Now, I'm putting an accent on that. Now, read it the way I have it accented. Accents, that's right. Below-y, that's right. Now, some people have a hard time doing that. They think they're doing it right when they're not. So stress, although that seems to me to be a very, very simple thing to get, a lot of people don't seem to have an ear to hear that stress. So the accents indicate stress. This is where you're going to stress the word. That's what it becomes. So all right, let's do it this way. This would be a good one here. All right, now first of all, here are the letters, the lambda, upsilon, omicron, mu, epsilon, nu, lu, min. I tried to say that without any emphasis, whatever. Now how would you, where's the stress on this? Pronounce that word. Now see, you said luamin. 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 Now that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Luamin, not luamin. Try this one. But now remember, you're not the Lone Ranger, because a lot of people have trouble learning to do that. All right, B-A-P-T-I-Z-O. How would you say this? Baptizo. Accent here, Baptizo. All right, so that's the idea of stress. And these are simple words. Man, some of them are strung out about like this. And you have to kind of get your breath and get a running start, you know, like you're going, here I go. All right, so accents indicating stress. All right, so the marks that serve as accents. The first one, let's just name them. The first one is called the acute, and originally would have been the idea of a rising stress. A rising pitch. But it doesn't have that anymore, and so you don't have to learn that. You learn what you want to. In other words, I'm going to tell you what I think you really need to learn, and then I'm going to tell you more stuff, and you can learn it if you want to. And I would encourage you to. Acute. All right, here is the acute. It is a slant mark like that, above the line, above the letter. It'd be above the letter. So, acute. Now then, the next one is called the circumflex. The circumflex. And this is kind of like a bent circle. And so it looks like this. Now, there are different forms of this. And you have to learn in every book. Now, some of them are just a little semicircle like that. Some of them are what we would call a little tilde, like that. Both of those are circumflex. They're both used, usually not in the same book, but you have to learn in a book. Any book you use, you have to learn how it's going to do things. Like I told you last time about a kappa and a key. In some books, they look all the world the same, except that the key is going to hang down lower than the kappa does. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to tell. So you have to learn that. And then the grave is the one that would be a falling. This is a rising falling, but again, it's just stress now. It's just stress. So don't try to, because there's no way we can know. We really cannot know exactly the musical form it would have had, but it's just thought that the circumflex was a rising falling, maybe a going up and then a going down. The grave is a slant, the opposite to the acute. Now, those are the three accent marks that you would have in your Greek. And so you need to know that, so that you can practice your Greek, and then so you can read and understand the Greek. So there are your three accent marks, the acute, the circumflex, and the grave. All right, so let me try something here now. Are you ready? Now try to do it without looking at your notes. What do accents in our study of Greek today indicate? What do we do with them? Stress. Anciently, they indicated musical pitch, but now stress. Now, how would you describe the acute? All right?
Lower left, upper right.
Lower left, upper right. Would we call that a forward slant? A forward slant mark? Because on your typewriter keyboard, that would be a forward slant, wouldn't it? All right. Well, what form does the circumflex take? Two different forms. All right. Yeah, that's right. Or a tilde. And then the grave? Upper left, lower right. That's right. Okay, so we got that down. See, that's one of the advantages of having a smart class. They really, really learn it fast. Okay, now here's another thing. Let's put a word. I'm going to put a word I've already had up there. This is a good word to illustrate this. Now, to divide this word into syllables, unless you have a diphthong, which you do not have there, then you divide and let each vowel stand as a syllable. So in that word, we would have three syllables. Lu-a-men. This one, being the last one, is called the ultima. Now this one over here, if you listen to British narration documentaries, especially of racing and stuff like that, they will talk about the next to the last mountain they've got to climb as the penultimate climb of the day. And so the penultimate means the second before the last. And so for short, you can call this the penult. But that's a little just short for penultimate. Now, Brother Strigley used to tease us about the penults. You know, have some penults. So, but it was short for penultimate, meaning the second from the last. Now, the reason why this is important is because if I hadn't told you anything else and I started talking about the first syllable here, and I'm talking about the first syllable and the third syllable, which one am I talking about? These terms give us an exact way to define precisely which syllable that we're talking about. So when we say ultima, instead of saying first, second, or third syllable, we say ultima. That means it's the last one. And when we say the penult or the penultimate, then that means the next to the last one. And then, in just what has to be sheer brilliance to come up with this term, is the anti-penult. You see, before the penult, and the penultimate is the one before the ultima. So there you go. So now you can talk about the three syllables. Now there are words that have more than three, lots of them, but accenting only concerns the last three syllables. Now aren't you glad? Only the last three syllables. That's all you have to be concerned with. So when you're dealing with a word like that, you learn how to divide it into syllables like that. And when you do... All right, now suppose suppose we have a word. All right, here's one.
Bob, wait just a minute. If you had a word that had seven syllables, then you don't even worry about the first
No,
four.
You would not be putting accents on them.
Okay.
Now, you will find that if you have that many syllables, you're going to be doing some accenting of it, because you cannot say four tones like that in just a strict monotone unless you really work hard at it. You know, in English, anti-disestablishmentarianism, you have to work at that. Otherwise, you're going to kind of have a little rising, falling. You're going to have some secondary stresses and everything. And you would do that if you had several syllables coming before. But so far as actually putting your accent mark, only the last three syllables. Okay? And you think of some of your medical words. And if you try to say those medical words and analyze, listen to what you're doing, you'll find that you're going up and down, making some little secondary stresses all along through there. And we do that automatically because human beings don't like monotones in their speech. We just won't have them. And we almost... Now, some people seem to have a gift for speaking in monotone, but most people, just by nature, aren't going to do that. All right, let's look at this one right here. Now, here's another word. All right, now, that word has how many syllables? It has two syllables. Which syllable is this one? This is the ultima. What is this one? The penult. Does it have an antepenult? No. Okay? See that? And then some words only have one syllable. So there you're only dealing with the ultima. That's all there is. So it can have, but you may have up to three that you're concerned with putting your accent mark. So one of the general rules of accent is that the accents can fall only on the last three syllables. But it's even more fun than that. Now you have your papers there, and this will have the information in there that you can use. And there are a good many more Greek words that will be included here. And what I wanted to tell you was, if you're not interested in going much further, get you one of the little inexpensive books. It'll have all that you need in it to practice. If you want to go further in it, get your Machens. Get your Machens. And then we will really go in it, and we'll study it. And if you want to, we'll study it all the way to the point that we're making a big blow-up copy of one of the unsealed manuscripts. And we will decipher that thing. So, it depends on you, how far you want to go with it. All right, now here's something else we need to understand about the acute accent. So what is the form? David, you remember what form the acute has?
Lower right, upper left.
All right, the lower left, upper right. Yeah, that way. All right, that's the acute. Now the acute can stand on any of the last three. It can stand, just so far as the general rules, it can stand on any one of the last three syllables. The circumflex can stand on the last two syllables. Only the last two. And then the grave, you might be able to predict only on the last syllable. All right. So, you remember, what are the three syllables? Let's name them off, starting with the last one. Ultima, penultima, the antepenultima, or the antepenult. So the acute can stand on the antepenult, on the penult, or the ultima. The circumflex can stand on the penult or the ultima, and the grave only can stand on the ultima. All right? Everybody got that? Did you process that? Okay. Now there's something else that we need to know about this. In dealing with the circumflex, it has another characteristic, and that is only... own long vowels or long syllables. So what if you have a word in which you have the last two syllables and neither one of them is long? Could you use a circumflex in that case? No, because you wouldn't have a long syllable. It can only stand over a long syllable. Okay, let me see if I can think of one that, Lee, you might can help me try to think of one that would have, it's sometimes hard to come up with one like that. All right, let me see. Yeah, all right, that would be, yeah, all right, here's one. Thank you. Lam, bon, amen. Now, there I am slipping into English. All right, so dividing this up into syllables, we'd have it like this. So in the last two syllables, we've got an omicron. Is that long or short? It's short. This epsilon, long or short? It's short. So we could not have a circumflex over those two because they're short. Do you see? Okay. All right. So, lambonomen. All right. Now, in this case, what syllable is this one? Antipino. You see how it is accented? Now, in this case, we've got four syllables right here. But we would never have to worry about accenting that fourth one, the first one in the thing here. Only these three we need to be concerned with. And in this case, this is where it would be. Lambonomen. All right, so you have some general rules here. But the general rules are not enough for you to be able to accent. For you to be able to accent, there is some more information that you would have to know. Okay, let's see how we're doing here. We started late, but we're at a good place. Now, these rules, this is not all the general rules. We have some more general rules of accent we need to talk about. And see, I have tried not to make the whole thing tonight just this, because that would burn you out real quick. So I've tried to tell us some other things. I've tried to practice working on how do you say this, showing you some things about inflection, conjugation in verbs, declension in nouns and adjectives. So I've kind of mixed it up there. But we need to come back and look at this. So read the information that you have there and study that carefully. And because what these rules, so far, the general rules, they have just kind of given you some guidance. They basically tell you how you can't accent. You can't put a circumflex over an antipenote. You can't do that. You can't do this. So what you have to do is then you have to learn two specific rules called the rule of verb accent, the rule of noun accent. And so that's what we will need to do so that you can see how then you can learn to accent. That's what you will need to be able to do. All right, let's see if we have any questions or any comments.
In the diphthongs, mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, that's good.
Are you sort of pronouncing both sounds, or is it simply a long I sound?
Well, it would actually be both, but it, for all practical purposes, you're just saying I. But probably it was an I. And so then together, I. So an A. And so it turned out to be that. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, well, we'll stop for tonight then.